Hello everyone. Continuing with chapter 4, Light of Compassion, we are going to read pages 241 to 260. So let's begin. One question followed another. Sometimes Shinichi let the other leaders accompanying him respond. A young Japanese woman spoke. My daughter is 5 years old, but she hasn't learned to speak yet. I am praying for her with all my might, but my prayers remain unanswered. Do you really think she will speak someday? Answering in Shinichi's place, Yukio Ishikawa said, The Gohonzon is absolute. It is certain that all prayers will be answered. The problem is that you doubt the Gohonzon. In that case, no matter how much Daimoku you may chant, your daughter's situation will not improve. How would you like it if someone was disrespectful towards you? You wouldn't feel motivated to exert yourself for his or her happiness either, would you? At this arrogant response, the woman uttered a stunned "Oh!" and lowered her head. Embracing her with a warm smile, Shinichi added reassuringly, But there's no need to worry. If you earnestly persevere in faith, your daughter will definitely learn to speak. This, however, will depend on the strength of your faith. Let us take, for example, one of those giant bronze temple bells that are so common in Japan. The sound it emits will depend on what you strike it with. If you use a great log and strike the bell with powerful force, it will reverberate loudly. But if you strike it with a matchstick or a wooden chopstick, it will emit only a feeble and ineffective sound. Similarly, we have the Gohonzon, which is endowed with the immeasurable power of the Buddha and the law. If, however, our faith and practice are weak, it will be like striking a giant bell with a matchstick. It will be impossible to bring forth any great benefit. If you exert yourself wholeheartedly in your Buddhist practice, you can definitely transform your negative karma and see an improvement in your daughter's condition. So please don't give up. Strive with all your might to the very end. By skillful use of analogy, Shinichi had given clear and precise guidance. The next question was from a woman who wore a rather troubled expression. Actually, one of my friends who lives in the same neighborhood occasionally asks me to mind her children so that she can go to church. It would ruin our friendship if I told her, I'm not going to look after your children while you go off to church. What should I do? Shinichi answered with a smile. This is America. Therefore, please have a big, magnanimous heart as vast as this great land itself. What your friend chooses to do while you mind her children is up to her. You are looking after her children out of friendship. In the process, you're also enabling your friend to form a connection to Buddhism. So there's absolutely no need for you to be anxious or nervous about what you're doing. Although the woman who had asked the question nodded in response to Shinichi's guidance, she still looked somewhat doubtful. Evidently, she was having trouble reconciling the Daishonin's propagation spirit of refuting the erroneous and revealing the true, Shakubuku, with the spirit of generosity towards others. She felt it was a contradiction in terms. Sensing her misgivings, Shinichi continued, As disciples of Nichiren Daishonin, it is natural that we take a strict stance in clarifying what is true and what is erroneous in terms of the law. At the same time, however, our interactions with others must be based on a spirit of tolerance and generosity. This is the true way of life for a Buddhist. The participants listened intently. The leaders from Japan also waited expectantly for his next words, notebooks in hand. To take a strict stance in distinguishing between good and evil and to show generosity towards others, these two things are in no way incompatible and are essentially part of the same whole. Let's suppose, for example, that someone eats poisonous mushrooms and is rushed to a doctor. Irrespective of who the patient may be, the doctor naturally exhausts all possible means to save the person and also offers sincere words of encouragement. This, we might say, is an example of generosity towards others. It is also likely, however, that the doctor will warn the patient not to eat harmful mushrooms in the future. I am sure there is no doctor who would stand by indifferently while the patient declares, "But poisonous mushrooms are delicious. I want to eat them again." This corresponds to taking a strict stance towards the law. In both these instances, the doctor is motivated by his compassion and commitment to removing the patient's suffering. This is also the behavior of a Buddhist. Shinichi then went on to recount how Nichiren Daishonin embarked on his bold campaign of refuting erroneous teachings and clarifying the true out of his profound compassion to enable all humankind to realize happiness. "The Daishonin," he said, "realized that if people were to persist in believing that the provisional pre-Lotus Sutra teachings constitute the highest teaching, they could not embrace faith in the Lotus Sutra of the Buddhism of Sōing, which contains the ultimate truth, and thereby they would destine themselves to unhappiness." Determined to stop this, the Daishonin, holding aloft the four dictums, waged a formidable battle against the corrupt, degenerate priests of his time who, with the support of ruling authorities, spread false doctrines throughout the land. He knew that if he ignored or failed to fight such evil, he would only be encouraging it and allowing it to run rampant. His struggle, however, took the form of dialogue known as Shakubuku. From beginning to end, his struggle was based on the power of speech and the written word. And despite being subjected to life-threatening persecutions, he upheld the spirit of non-violence. Shinichi addressed the woman, "For that reason, there is no contradiction between the spirit of Shakubuku, that of refuting the erroneous and revealing the true, and true friendship. The spirit of compassion is fundamental to both. Consequently, it is the Buddhist ideal that the more we exert ourselves in faith, the greater the generosity with which we can embrace our friends and deepen our friendships. Because Shakubuku is an endeavor to touch the other's lives through dialogue, trust and friendship are essential. Please become a person who transcends differences of religion and prays for the happiness of her fellow human beings, who forges deep ties of friendship with many people. Your doing so will also testify to the depth and breadth of Buddhism." This was the first time that the humanistic way of life based on Buddhism had been outlined to the members. They were struck by its freshness and engraved it in their hearts. After fielding several more questions, Shinichi then announced the establishment of Washington District. Fumi Shiring, who had allowed her home to be used for the discussion meeting, was appointed district chief. Groups were also established in Washington, the Carolinas, Pennsylvania, and Florida. When Shinichi prepared to leave the room at the end of the meeting, an American man, his face showing deep emotion, addressed him in English. Nagayasu Masaki, who was standing at Shinichi's side, acted as their interpreter. "I was deeply moved by what you said," the man said. "I think the teachings of Buddhism are wonderful. I'd like to join your religion, but I cannot. I am a Catholic. It's really too bad. I'm very sorry." "Whether you formally belong to the organization is not an issue," Shinichi reassured him. "If you believe in the Buddhist teachings and chant even one Daimoku, if you warmly embrace and support your wife and the members while sharing our spirit and aspirations, that is enough. Through this, you will come to have an even greater appreciation of Buddhism." Smiling, the man held out his hand to Shinichi. Kosen Rufu translates directly into the happiness of humanity and the realization of world peace. It is simply revealing and cultivating the positive state of Buddhahood inherent in all people's lives and enveloping the world in the brilliance of friendship forged on the basis of humanism. In a sense, Kosen Rufu is a movement to realize a renaissance of life in the universal realm of the human being. Fumi Shiring ushered Shinichi to a room on the second floor, where an elderly woman with a dignified bearing soon brought him some refreshments. It was Fumi's mother, Tomino. Since taking faith some 2 years before, mother and daughter had been steadily exerting themselves in practice. Tumino, despite being almost 80, was filled with a sincere desire to do anything at all to assist the Soka Gakkai, and she supported Fumi behind the scenes in her energetic activities for Kosen Ryufu. Tomino greeted Shinichi with a smile and said, "Thank you very much for the meeting. I know how tired you must be. Please have some refreshments." Shinichi thanked her. Tomino then began to speak in a quiet, relaxed manner. "Listening to you speak impressed upon me what a truly noble organization is the Soka Gakkai. I'm sure it will develop by leaps and bounds here in America too. As it grows, however, the organization is sure to encounter strong opposition and criticism in society. Long experience tells me that periods of adversity are inevitable in life. The crucial question, I think, is who will protect our precious Soka Gakkai at that time." Shinichi was surprised and at the same time pleased that this elderly member of only 2 years' practice should give such detailed thought to the Soka Gakkai's future. Tomino continued in a pleasant yet firm tone. "But no matter what happens, as long as I'm alive, Washington will be fine. Please rest assured, I will do my best." Shinichi keenly felt that the children of the Buddha were beginning to emerge steadily one after another from the soil of America. "I am grateful," he said. "Thank you. Please stay in good health and live a long, long life. Please continue to protect the Soka Gakkai." The elderly woman then noticed the beads of perspiration on Shinichi's face. "Sensei, you're sweating. Are you sick?" Shinichi was running a fever, but he answered, "No, there's no need for alarm. I'm just perspiring a little from the exertion of having spoken so energetically earlier." "I see. Still, you look fatigued. Please rest here for a while. I worry about your health more than anything." She then discreetly withdrew from the room. For a brief time, Shinichi lay back against the sofa to rest his weary body, his heart soothed by the warmth and thoughtfulness Tomino had showed him. That evening, Shinichi and his party stayed at a hotel in Washington, D.C. After breakfast the following morning, Aisuke Akizuki dropped by Shinichi's room. "Sensei, I'll be returning to New York ahead of you and the others," Akizuki informed him. "Ah, yes, that's right," Shinichi said. "You were going to visit a newspaper today, weren't you?" As managing editor of the Seikyo Shimbun, the Soka Gakkai's newspaper, Akizuki had an appointment to visit the offices of the New York Times. "Please observe carefully and try to learn what makes the New York Times an internationally respected newspaper. It will be important to actively incorporate anything you find useful into our paper's operations. Eventually, we'll have to publish the Seikyo Shimbun daily, and above all, develop it into a publication that will be universally accepted as one of the world's leading newspapers." Indelibly engraved in Shinichi's heart were the many times that Josei Toda had voiced his desire to enable people throughout Japan and throughout the world to read the Seikyo Shimbun. Shinichi had vowed to realize his mentor's wish without fail. Thus, he was constantly trying to think of ways to develop the Seikyo Shimbun into an internationally renowned newspaper. Akizuki replied, "I'll do my best." But frankly, he had been surprised and somewhat overwhelmed when he heard the words, "one of the world's leading newspapers." Until August that year, the Seikyo Shimbun had been published as an 8-page weekly. It was only since September that it had begun to be published twice a week, a 4-page issue on Wednesdays and an 8-page issue on Saturdays. Expressing the great dreams he held for the paper, Shinichi said, "The Seikyo Shimbun is the organ of the Soka Gakkai. At the same time, I see it as a journal for the people." "A journal for the people?" "That's right, a news journal for humanity. Ordinary papers are filled with dark and dismal news. To some extent, this can't be helped because it's a reflection of society. Nevertheless, none of these newspapers applies any thought or editorial effort to enabling people to find hope and experience joy while living in such a society. None of them teaches its readers how to truly challenge and overcome life's sufferings. But it is just this kind of newspaper that society needs most. Isn't the Seikyo Shimbun the only newspaper fulfilling this function? For that reason, it is truly a newspaper for humanity. Shinichi's words brought a flush of excitement to Akizuki's face. Looking earnestly at him, Shinichi leaned towards Akizuki and emphasized, "The Seikyo Shimbun has a truly immense mission. For the Soka Gakkai, it must be a textbook of faith as well as a medium for forging heart-to-heart bonds among the members. Its mission in society, meanwhile, is to fight injustice and wrongdoing, and, with the compassionate light of Buddhism, to illuminate the true way for people to live while guiding the way to genuine peace and happiness for humanity. Our paper inherits the spirit of Mr. Makiguchi and Mr. Toda, who risked their lives to take a stand against the militaristic government during World War II. In that respect, there is no newspaper more uniquely suited to communicating the true path to peace than the Seikyo Shimbun." Shinichi looked out of the window. It seemed as if he were gazing up at Josei Toda. "Did you know," he continued, "that even while he was being persecuted as a Buddhist during the war, President Toda continued to fight in the shadows against the government as a magazine publisher?" "No, I didn't," Akizuki replied. "I heard from President Toda that in January 1940, he launched a monthly children's magazine called Elementary Students Japan. This might be called a forerunner of Boys Adventure, which was subsequently renamed Boys Japan, the publication that I later came to edit. Josei Toda began publishing Elementary Students Japan in 1940. That year marked the 2600th anniversary of the beginning of the Japanese imperial line, an event that was celebrated by a series of major festivities that were held with great pomp and splendor throughout the country. The Imperial Rule Assistance Association also was formed that year. Japan was now already more than 2.5 years into a full-scale war with China, and the National Mobilization Law, which had been enacted in 1938, was in full force. In short, it was a time when the Japanese government was intent on solidifying the overall framework for securing the cooperation of the country's entire civilian population in the war effort. Even school books from the first grade on contained exhortations such as "Advance, advance, soldiers, advance." It was an era in which militarism was relentlessly drilled into the pure and tender hearts of children. Magazines of all varieties also vied with one another to extol and glorify the war. Freedom of speech and thought was subject to strict government regulation, and nothing could be published unless it endorsed the war. Constraints on newspapers and magazines were further amplified by an extreme shortage of paper needed for their manufacture. These developments foretold the arrival of a dark, forbidding age devoid of freedom. Toda was deeply concerned that the prevailing militaristic propaganda would distort the hearts and minds of children destined to shoulder the future and cause them to become narrow and intolerant in their outlook and thinking. "Our children," Josei Toda thought, "will grow up without knowing of the splendid cultures, industries, and national characters of other countries. If they continue to be tainted with xenophobia and come to regard fighting and dying for their country as the highest virtue, then their whole lives will be ruined. The country's future will also be extremely bleak." As a Buddhist and a human being, Toda's conscience compelled him to take action to rectify this situation. He settled upon the idea of publishing a magazine that would open children's eyes to the world and nurture in them an ability to discern the truth. Government regulation of the print media, however, had become increasingly strict. The severe paper shortage also led the authorities to deny, in principle, permission for the launching of new magazines. Toda, however, tirelessly lobbied the relevant government departments and finally succeeded in getting his new magazine, Elementary Students Japan, onto the newsstands. The magazine, of course, had to comply with the government's policies. The table of contents of the first issue displayed in bold type two or three suitably rousing titles that were in keeping with the prevailing wartime mood. But closer examination of the actual articles revealed that they were only very short essays. The magazine's main feature article, part of an ongoing monthly series, meanwhile, was extremely pacifistic in content. Furthermore, two or three war-related columns that had started in the first issue disappeared from the magazine's pages within a short time. This made Elementary Students Japan exceptional among other magazines of the time in that it did anything but glorify the war. Particularly noteworthy was the magazine's global outlook, featuring reports about the fine cultures and industries of other countries and stories from Europe. The magazine also carried a few short stories on war themes, but the characters painted war as being far from the glorious adventure it was made out to be in other fiction. It was a startling departure given the times. Even in an age when publications were threatened with closure if they failed to sing the praises of war, Toda did not compromise his editorial policy. He wanted to teach the children, who were so precious to him, the correct way for human beings to live. When the Japanese government changed the name of elementary schools to citizens' schools, Mr. Toda was forced to rename the magazine. During the war, the military government referred to children as junior citizens, but Toda boldly rejected this designation. Substituting junior with the word small, he renamed his magazine Small Citizens Japan. Though this may seem trifling, it was a definite sign of Josei Toda's firm refusal to capitulate to the authorities' demands. His choice of the term small citizens was also perhaps an expression of his determination to staunchly protect and raise these young successors with every last ounce of his energy. With the March 1941 issue, Josei Toda began publishing the magazine under the new name Small Citizens Japan. That issue contained a special feature, shedding light on the secret and the mysterious. In his editorial for that month, which he titled The Mother of Science, Toda wrote, "The people of ancient times, devoid of learning and civilization, worshipped what they found wondrous or inexplicable, for these things inspired in them a sense of fear and awe. Lacking a scientific mind, the ancients were deeply superstitious, ignorantly believing in that which they didn't understand. In the realm of science, however, we pursue the various questions that arise in our minds, the whys and the hows, and strive to bring them to their correct conclusion. It is a realm that enlightens and illuminates the world and leads it towards progress and development. Seeing an apple fall from a tree in the garden, Isaac Newton discovered the theory of universal gravitation. By gazing at water boiling in an iron kettle, James Watt was inspired to invent the steam engine. Didn't Thomas Edison and Marie Curie, too, pursue their doubts and questions honestly and single-mindedly? Wonder and doubt are the mother of science. In an era overshadowed by spiritualism centering on state Shinto, Toda spoke to the children of Japan of the folly of ignorantly believing in that which they didn't understand. He urged them to have inquiring scientific minds with which to pursue their doubts and questions and honestly and single-mindedly. In these words, we cannot help but sense the cry of Toda's conscience as he fought undaunted amid the impenetrable darkness of the times. The October issue of Small Citizens Japan, including a feature titled Protect Our Skies for students of the higher grades of the citizens' schools. This bold title belied the article's actual content, which outlined how children should go about protecting themselves during air raids and gave detailed instructions for making gas masks and building air raid shelters. The feature also contained an article on the air raid drills carried out by children in Great Britain and the Soviet Union. A portion reads, "What pain and misery air raids have inflicted, especially on the small citizens of Britain. The constant news reports we hear hint that their tragic plight is far worse than we can imagine. In the beginning, many British parents sent their children to America or to take refuge in the countryside from the danger of the air raids over urban areas. However, many children still remain in the dangerous cities. When they see a bomb being dropped even some distance away, they quickly fall flat onto the road to protect themselves. So used to this state of affairs have they grown that they are quite calm and matter of fact about it." The issue of Small Citizens Japan, in which this feature appeared, came out on October 1, 1941, only 2 months before Japan declared war on America and Britain. Anglo-Japanese relations were already extremely strained, with Japan viewing Britain increasingly as a hostile nation. It was an extremely dangerous time to be printing a sympathetic article on the hardships and brave struggles of the British children to protect themselves from air raids. Josei Toda recognized that all the world's children, not only those in Japan, had to be protected. Nor was there any need for children to hate one another. Rather, he clearly asserted that children should come to understand one another's suffering and join hands in friendship. Although the article was titled "Protect Our Skies," Toda actually was striving to protect the precious lives of the children who would be responsible for the next generation. In this article, we can also clearly sense Toda's fervent appeal to these young people, how he desperately urged them to live with all their might. Small Citizens Japan ceased publication in April 1942. With censorship growing increasingly strict, Toda chose this course rather than continuing to produce a magazine that, by complying with government's directives, would be forced to extol the war and incite people to rush off to die for their country. In a dramatic turnabout after the war, the Japanese media, without exception, became pacifistic. It was easy to make loud declarations for peace in a world where freedom was now guaranteed in speech, news reporting, and publishing. But to ascertain whether this pacifism was genuine, one had to question what the news media and their journalists had done during the war. This applies not just to the realm of journalism, but to religion also. No matter how much a religious organization may speak of peace and democracy and assume the guise of justice today, it is vital to remember that the organization's true nature is revealed by how it behaved during the war. Shinichi Yamamoto told Aisuke Akizuki everything he knew about this children's magazine published by Toda. "During the war, President Toda fought to the very limit as a journalist, walking a razor's edge. This is the spirit that the Seikyo Shimbun must perpetuate. Speech and writing not based on philosophy and conviction are as insubstantial as smoke. The Seikyo Shimbun, however, is based on the great philosophy of life known as Buddhism." Akizuki, with an earnest expression, listened intently to Shinichi's words. The sunlight filtering through the trees shimmered on the hotel window. "President Yamamoto," Akizuki asked, "what is the most important point to bear in mind in writing articles that will enable the Seikyo Shimbun to become a top international newspaper?" Behind his glasses, Akizuki's eyes shone with a burning intensity. Shinichi replied, "First, because the Seikyo Shimbun is the journal of our organization, it is natural that we strive to write articles that will enable members to have confidence and conviction in faith and to summon forth courage. Beyond that, our fundamental aim should be to pursue world peace and the happiness of humankind based on the compassionate spirit of the great Buddhism of Nichiren Daishonin. It is important to stress in our articles that, instead of promoting national interests or ideologies, we must search for and try to build a common path of humanity as a global race or global family. I have long thought that the Seikyo Shimbun must become a newspaper that will be known as a voice of global conscience and global common sense. for this accords with the original spirit of the Daishonin's Buddhism. Akiuzuki felt the limitations of his own way of thinking dissolve. He had pondered how best to produce the paper in terms of content and subject matter, but he had never considered it from such a broad perspective. Furthermore, Shinichi continued, it is important to express the universal philosophy of Buddhism, which upholds the equality of all people, in a way that is fresh and easy to grasp, and that accords with society and our modern age. We have to discuss Buddhism in terms that are accessible and comprehensible to all people. A newspaper only understood by Soka Gakkai members will not spread in society. Similarly, a paper so complex that even members can't understand it exists only for the gratification of the editorial staff. In addition, we must accurately discern what society is searching for and what it holds to be important. All the answers society is now seeking can be found within Buddhism and within the real essence of the Soka Gakkai. The question is whether we can always express these in a way that accords with the issues that concern society and our times. We have to aim for daily improvement and innovation. The times are always changing. Society, too, is in motion, as are people's minds. It is vital that we continue to offer guidelines that inspire and draw understanding, while being sensitive to these changes and responding appropriately. Therefore, whether it be with respect to headlines, articles or design and layout, it is important not to fall into a rut and just content ourselves with doing things the same old way. A newspaper is a living thing. No one is interested in buying fish that is no longer fresh. In the same way, readers will discard a paper that is hackneyed or has grown stagnant. Shinichi's guidance was clear and to the point. That brings us to the end of today's reading. Next time, we will be completing the chapter Light of Compassion and starting the next chapter, Pioneers. So until next time, look after yourselves.